is the Page Publishing Book Club. How you doing? I'm Alice Stockton Rossini. Fred Stevens is a young, successful realtor flipping properties in Western Pennsylvania. But a few years ago, he was diagnosed as bipolar and realized he has a condition called hyperamnesia, the ability to recall very detailed events during trauma. He decided to start writing about these events to better understand them and now shares them in his book entitled Crossover. So give me an example of what happens to you.
You know, I describe how I go from being a professional poker player to, you know, jumping on cars and kind of like the thinking behind that and kind of walking the reader through, you know, how you kind of break down those episodes and, you know, get to those really scary, bad places.
So you didn't even know that you had this.
Totally unaware. I had on my third episode is when I officially got the diagnosis. So I was, you know, pretty normal kid in high school, played basketball, went to college, and, you know, ended up in a straitjacket in a mental hospital a year or so later. Then I tapered off medication and had a similar episode as I like rose to become like a top ranked online professional poker player. And then had a similar situation, you know, very public outbreak of mania. And, you know, it wasn't until like I moved to Texas and I basically grew a startup company from 2 to 35 employees in Austin. I'm managing, you know, all these people. There's different layers of management that I created. And I end up in the hospital again after, you know, eating pickles out of the garbage can. And then finally I got the diagnosis and I've taken my recovery seriously. And I'm in a very like good place now, you know, running a real estate company and really reflecting on and advocating for mental health now.
When you describe these episodes, they just come out of nowhere. Do you know what sets them off?
Yeah. So the first episode, I was in college. I was using marijuana and set it off initially. So what happens is it kind of takes over. You know, the clouds start to form messages. If a traffic light turns from red to green, it means go do something. You're kind of being guided by your environment. And, you know, the songs on the radio will tell you to do something. And so in the book, I hear a song on the radio and I go and do it based off of that with no awareness. You kind of think it's something special and you have it. No one else has it and no one else could understand. And then, you know, in mine, it was like very public, forceful events that kind of got me to the hospital experiences where still even in the hospital, I'm thinking, how do I break out of here? What do I do? You know, not, oh, something's wrong with me. So it really takes, you know, about 18 months of recovery to really understand like, wow, I just was in a very, you know, triggered by either marijuana or stress or isolation. In my third episode, I wasn't smoking any marijuana at all. So we kind of like figured out through that, you know, I'm bipolar and it's not, you know, a marijuana induced episode. Each person has a very unique experience when dealing with these things. I was very lucky because for some reason, every time I got into a position where it was like about to get very bad, I mean, there's one scene where I'm standing on a bridge, like ready to jump. And for some reason, I was always kind of told to not do it and go back and regroup and, you know, look for your next mission type of thing. So I'm sure, you know, a lot of people, they don't have that built in, whatever lucky thing that I had. And you can kind of see how someone homeless on the street might remain homeless on the street and not necessarily have the thought or awareness to figure out what's actually going on and get help. Well, and I'm lucky to have the support and family around me to really help me with those things. So I have a Facebook group called Crossover, Look Inside a Manic Mind. And I'm doing some marketing and ads on there just to, I feel like people reading the book is probably the best way initially for me to make an impact. I have a Instagram and Twitter accounts that I've just recently set up. It's crossover_book. And really what's been cool, I made a LinkedIn account for Brett Stevens. And I've just been connecting with therapists and doctors and, you know, anyone in that field. And really in about a month, I've made so many connections and I've been asking them like, hey, would you find this helpful? Would you find this helpful? And they're, you know, a lot of people are replying yes. And then I'm getting the book in front of them that way. I'm going to get certified in mental health first aid. So this will allow me to basically run a classroom of people who want to understand like how to help others that are going through it. And I'm hoping that I can get pretty comfortable with that and just kind of see where I can go with that. But I really have to get my own skills up before I think too big about how to spread the message. But that's kind of my plan, you know, learn how to do it, talk about it, get the book out there, and just see where it goes from there.
You're going to help a lot of people, Brett. Thank you. Demetris Sandridge was a chauffeur for a multimillionaire in Detroit, where his mom was nanny and housekeeper. And when he really studied how this man became so wealthy, he learned valuable life lessons that he shares in his book entitled Breaking the Chains of Poverty.
You know, after being with this gentleman, this multimillionaire, for years and seeing how he navigated his life, you know, it inspired me. And what I noticed was how he processed information. And that turned the light bulb on for me. And so I just began to research it and try to figure out what I need to do differently. And what I realized was that poverty was a mindset. And because you're in a certain environment, it causes you to think a certain way. And my mind began to expand because I had an opportunity to go places that I never went before, see things that I never saw before. And my mind began to like open up, and I began to understand that it was my surroundings, it was my environment that was really holding me back. In essence, it was my mindset. So I began to write about it and began to pull myself out of poverty. And, you know, the main reason really was to sow back into my mother. I wanted her to experience the life that I knew she could experience, and I wanted to position me and my family to do that. A lot of the building blocks help me where I am now. Had I not went to jail, my home was foreclosed on.
So you went down a little rocky road there before you.
Of course, of course. I still had some of that residue from poverty because that's what I was used to. So it took some time to break those chains.
How do you get to the young guys that are in jail for the first time right now or on their way because of poverty?
It's the people that you surround yourself around. If you can just break free for a moment, if you will, and get around someone that is where you're trying to go and ask for help, you know, just ask, I need help. I mean, people are asking me, how do you do this? How did you get from there to here? And that's my opportunity to share with those individuals how to get this thing done. It's easy, but you really got to position yourself to be in the right place around the right people, and then your life will begin to just take those baby steps, and you'll find yourself where you need to be, you know, in the future.
All right, Demetris, thank you. Mickey M.A. Shepherd has decided to set the record straight on adoption. Her book covers the often difficult process of adoption in various states, dealing with lawyers, doctors, birth mothers, and why it's all worth it. The name of her book, In a Heartbeat, The Miracle of a Family.
My book is about three things. It's about the law of attraction, it's about biology doesn't create a family, and it's about adoption. We've had the most wonderful experience. I was involved in real estate, and I was in San Antonio for a conference, and a friend of mine said, "Have you and Tom ever considered adopting?" She said, "Would you if you could?" I said, "In a heartbeat," and that's the name of the book. 2 years later, I was at another meeting, and my husband called. He said, "Who's Carol Thompson?" And I said, "My realtor friend." He said, "Well, she has a friend who has a friend who decided this morning she wants to put her son up for adoption, and do we want him?" That was April 5th, 1990, and we adopted my son at birth. I was in the delivery room. And they wrapped him up and they brought him over and they're going, "Who do we give him to?" And that's when your heart stops. And so she looked at him and she said, "Hi, CJ. Welcome to the world. I want you to meet your mother." And then we went through a lot of things that people don't understand about adoption. We hired an attorney in both states to terminate her rights in Minnesota. I sent her a letter once a year with pictures so she'd know what was going on. 1 year, we had moved from Colorado to Arizona, and then we moved to New York to let him grow up around family. And the plan was at 18, we would offer him a chance to meet her, and it would be his choice. He always knew. I mean, this wasn't like a big surprise. And he said, "Not really, you know, you're my mom." But at that time in 1990 and after that, there were so many bad adoption stories out there that I think it scared a lot of people from even trying. And so My whole thing has been, if I can get a good news story out there, people can find out how wonderful it is, not to mention it's an incredible loving choice for the birth parents as well. That's what I'm trying to do. I just want people to be aware. I'm not trying to change all of their thinking, but at least know there are other alternatives, because there's so many families waiting to adopt in the United States. Anywhere from 1 to 2 million to 8.1 million, and it's growing. This all started because my dad came into my life when I was 12. So he wasn't my biological father. And as a result of him coming into my life, I believed every good thing that ever happened to me after that was because of him. My grandmother worked for the phone company and asked everybody to please take an orphan home for the holidays. So they did, and they adopted her. But my mother carried on that tradition. My brother had befriended a friend who was a new kid in school when they were 12, and they were on their way home, and they stopped at his house, and his family had moved without telling him, and he became part of our family. His name was Chet Holmes. He wrote a best-selling book in 2007, and he said, you know, if your mom hadn't adopted me, my life wouldn't have been like this. I lucked out. A local person started a bookstore in town, so we did a book signing there. I've gone to a few book clubs, and right now I'm working with somebody who used to be a producer for Oprah, and she's helping me get the message in a way that I can get it out to TV and radio stations.
All right, Mickey. Well, good luck. Terry Ribbon has been a writer all of her life, but it was her journey with her mom through lung cancer that finally compelled her to publish her first book. It's entitled Through Your Daughter's Eyes. Now, you say your writing was your outlet.
It really was. It was my outlet. I put it all together, and it took me many, many years because I was afraid to let it go. We went through a lot. First, they thought it was her kidney. They removed part of her kidney, and then they took part of her lung, only to find out it had really stemmed from the lung the whole time. She was my best friend. We did everything together, and this was our journey together. And I finally let it go, and I finished it, and it was hard to do. I didn't want to finish it because that was the end. You know
right.
what I mean? It's about her journey through cancer. In poetic form, and me as a daughter looking through her eyes of what was happening to her and everything around her. And while I was with her through chemo, I would write while she slept. I would write. If anyone was going to beat cancer, I believed it was going to be my mother, because she was a fighter. And I wanted this to be for everyone else who, unfortunately, you go through this and you have to gather a strength like there's none other, because what you see is horrific. What you feel is helpless. You can feel so alone, and you can feel like you're the only one going through this, but you're not. You know, there's so many people in this world, unfortunately, that are going through the same thing, and you have to like gather together to hold on to one another, lift yourself up, because you have to always look for tomorrow. Because if you're not looking for tomorrow, you know, you have no hope. And I really believe, I mean, even if we had people who would come to visit her, if they weren't positive, I would ask them to leave, because I never wanted there to be negativity in that house.
Yeah.
And some of her friends are referenced in the book. Two of her best girlfriends from childhood, they came. It was November, because it was the election year. And she, ill as she was, we put a fur coat on her. She had her pajamas on, and she insisted that we take her to the polls so she could vote.
Nah.
And we did. We had always wanted to write a book together one day. A book like this, no. But I feel that this is us together. And if we can help others like ourselves who unfortunately have gone through this, then it's doing what it should.
Right.
And that's what I want. I just had my first book signing, which was wonderful. And I had feedback from people who I didn't even really know. And they just said to me that it comforted them so. And that's what I was so hoping it would do.
Terry, you can't ask for more than that. Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us. This is the Page Publishing Book Club.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple, iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-204-6099 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-204-6099 for your free author submission kit.
We're back on the Page Publishing Book Club. I'm Alice Stockton-Rossini. Gary Schnell is a child psychologist in Wisconsin who started writing in an effort to deal with the suicide of his 25-year-old son. But his book, Consciousness, All in One and One in All, is not so much about loss as it is intended to offer an alternative way for people searching for greater meaning in life to understand our universe.
As I say, it started out as an effort to deal with Daryl's death. But what it ended up being more than anything was offering a potential alternative way of understanding our minds, our brains, our consciousness, our relationships with one another, and an alternative view of our relationship with God. And this is where I found my difficulties. We all tend to live our lives at the mercy of our senses and brains. We view other things as separate and different from us, and that includes God. We live a life of separation and fear, and it was in that perspective of God being up there and me down here, of right and wrong, good and evil, heaven and hell, that I just could find no peace regarding the death of my son. It's just how we understand our space-time universe, and consistent with cause and effect of dualistic Newtonian physics. And I got to thinking that with all of my reading, I've come to understand that there is a more inclusive and primary physics, quantum physics, that is not dependent on cause and effect, but on informed probabilities, such that perhaps quantum physics means that, you know, we understand the primary stuff of the universe as more than matter, space, and time. And perhaps the primary stuff of the universe is consciousness and information. And I explore that in the book, that the universe is an extension of quantum physics, entangled, not separate, intimately and mutually informed by consciousness, by God, and that these principles of quantum physics emanate out of consciousness or God. This would permit such things as that we experience every day, like near-death experiences, transplant memories, and all manner of psychic phenomenon, which I explore, that just aren't allowed for in the Newtonian cause and effect paradigm. But it's just so difficult for us to break through this veil of dualisms and Newtonian physics to have such an understanding. And this is where things like meditation come into play. It allows us to consider that our minds and consciousness might be greater than the cause and effect principles that guide the functioning of our brains. And so with the help of meditation, we can begin to change the focus of our brain away from separation and fear to that of an interdependent and empathic mode of existence. And that's pretty basically what I wrote about. And it allowed me to, rather than view God as separate from me, it allowed me to view me as interdependent part of God. And I was able to find much more comfort in that than in my previous outlook on God.
Maybe more people will find comfort too. Thanks, Gary. Kiera Scranton is a freelance makeup artist in LA, and she devours young adult novels. She was determined to write one of her own, and now she has. It's entitled A Bad Joke and a Metaphor.
I have these two friends who are very, very different from each other, and one of them was always, always telling terrible jokes, and it became like a thing that was always anticipated. And I had another friend who always, always very grim and always spoke in metaphors. And one day I was sitting next to both of them and they were both talking and the story kind of wrote itself. I started writing it 2015, a couple of years after I graduated from high school. It just took me a long time to finish it. I finished it. Essentially, the book is about Belle and Julian and dealing with their own personal grief. You have Belle, who has lost her mother, and Julian, who just got broken up with. And you see them both dealing with these situations in ways that one could argue doesn't fit. Belle treating her mother's death like a breakup, and you have Julian treating his breakup like a death. And you have a really tragic subject that I kind of try to make comical. And I just wanted people to understand that you don't have to always think of things in terms of, oh, well, it could be worse. I really hope people read the book and realize that they don't have to minimize their experiences with loss or grief. Like, people deal with things in different ways, you know. Belle has to learn to deal with her loss and kind of acknowledge it. And so by the end of the book, after her and Julian kind of become friends, she kind of has her big moment of acknowledging what happened to her mother. And Julian has to kind of do the same thing. He sort of has his moment of, oh, I guess it's not the end of the world. But what happened to Belle was really serious, and she's not really taking it seriously. So they kind of help each other through it. The book is catered towards young adults. So I really wanted people in my age range or younger to, like I said earlier, like, learn to not minimize their experiences when they think about how things could be worse. That doesn't mean that what you're going through isn't painful for you. I just want people to be able to relate to the story and feel heard.
And doesn't everybody deserve to be heard? All right, Kiara, thank you. Ronald Carter is a retired New York City bus driver and cabbie, and he pays tribute to his mom and all women in his book entitled Only Women Can Save the World.
I felt so bad that women blew it.
Women blew it in 2016?
Yes, they did. Listen, it's a woman's world now. Men just run it. And as we see, man's thinking is totally out of control. You mean to tell me man wants to pass a law that if a woman is raped or molested, that she has to have that baby or die? What kind of man have a hatred for a woman when his mother had to give him life? There's nothing greater than mother. I mean, it's totally bad for women in today's world when it shouldn't be. You women still going for the brainwash that you are inferior, you're not the superior being. Let's see the man who can carry a child for 9 months.
Hear, hear.
You know what I mean? It's basically about my mother, my idol. It's all about mother. Your mother represents your first model of woman, okay? So if you have a hatred for a woman, that must mean you have a hatred for your mother. It's basically an essay about how my mother influence made me the man that I am, and how you as a woman have to be of my mother's character. I mean, take no mess from no man, take no mess from no woman, and definitely take no mess from no child. This is what's wrong in America now. I'm in the cab transporting a mother and a son. The son must be 8, maybe 9, maybe even 10 years old. All of a sudden, the son screams out, "You don't buy me these Air Jordans, I ain't going to school." Now, the first thing came to my mind, my mother would have choked you, boy. You can't tell this woman how to spend her money. My mother was like a Marine drill sergeant, never absent, never late, my entire school career, my entire. My mother was 5'2", 5'1", 250 pounds, with big hands, and will choke you, okay? Listen, I was scared of that woman for 14 years. And my thinking, my personal feeling, if you women don't come together and we don't get a woman president in 2024, this world can end. I mean, women do the same job, get less money. Why is that? Okay. Why is that? Equal rights, all these things. Do you think that the abortion thing would exist if Hillary was president, won, you know, the presidency, yes, because you women got to come together and make this happen, man. I don't want the world to end. I'm 63. These are the best years of my life, but man in control, we can lose everything. The women got to come together, form the Women's World Fund. Every woman in the world contributes to that, and you back that woman, 2024, she gets in.
All right, I'll take your word for it. Thank you. Finally, John Waller did a lot of technical writing as an organizational development consultant in Colorado, but in his book, Washington Park, A Jewel Among Peers, he spreads his creative wings with a pictorial treatment of one of his favorite places.
And I'm a shutterbug. I'm a photography nut. And so every time I went to the park, I would take a camera with me. And over a period of about 15 years, I accumulated thousands of pretty nice pictures of this park in spring, winter, summer, and fall. And I started out just categorizing the pictures to put them in some sort of formal presentation. And in the process of doing that, I found myself thinking, this might make a pretty nice coffee table book. And here we are. Beneath each caption, it has a description of what the reader is looking at. It goes through the timeline of when the park was developed and all the changes and who the primary architects of the park were. And I've also put in some poems.
So how does this park compare to other parks, you know, across the country? Like, how does someone in California or Arizona or New Jersey relate to this?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. It was put on the National Register of Historic Places in 1986. And many portions of the park, particularly the northern end of it, were designed by the Olmsted brothers, which, of course, are the sons of Frederick Law Olmsted, who designed much of the acreage in New York Central Park. It's about 168 acres, 10 blocks, and you could spend 5 or 6 hours just exploring all different corners of the park. So it's one of Denver's, if not the nicest park in Denver. A lot of people actually compare it to Central Park on a miniature scale because there are multiple bodies of water. There are historical structures and statues and artwork. There are two very large flower gardens. One of the gardens is called the Perennial Garden. It has 54 individual flower beds, and 25,000 annuals are planted there every year. Marketing, I've done a number of things. It's called Next Door, a social media site assigned to certain zip codes or certain neighborhoods, told people within my zip code about the book. And then there's free circulars that are distributed throughout the neighborhood, paid for advertisements in those. And then I donated half of every book sale to a nonprofit called Friends and Neighbors of Washington Park that is dedicated to the preservation and maintenance of the park itself. So when all is said and done, I get 75 cents per book. This is not about money for me. It truly was kind of a labor of love.
Well, John, I can't think of a better reason to write a book. Good for you. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to all of our authors. If you missed anything, just go to 710WOR.com and download that podcast. I'm Alice Stockton-Rossini. I'll see you next time.